This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before the Trojan War, there is no indication of any common action in Hellas, nor indeed of the universal prevalence of the name. The best proof of this is furnished by Homer. Born long after the Trojan War, he nowhere calls all of them by that name. In his poems, they are called Danaans, Argives, and Achaeans. He does not even use the term barbarian, probably because the Hellenes had not yet been marked off from the rest of the world by one distinctive appellation. It appears, therefore, that the several Hellenic communities, comprising not only those who first acquired the name, city by city, as they came to understand each other, but also those who assumed it afterwards as the name of the whole people, were, before the Trojan War, prevented by their want of strength and the absence of mutual intercourse from displaying any collective action. Well, well, well. This is Let's Talk About Myths, Baby! And I am your host, she who dips her toe into the underworld river that is history every now and again. Liv. I do love ancient Mediterranean history, like, obviously, but my own obsession lies in its mythology. Still, every now and again, there's a topic in Greek history that I just can't help myself from diving into. And making about mythology as much as possible. This year's special research series, in the vein of the past series that I have done on Atlantis and Sparta, is the God's Damned Bronze Age and its collapse. You can all thank my assistant producer, Michaela, for this, both the idea and most of the research, honestly. This is a Michaela passion project that I was more than happy to tag along for. The Bronze Age is one of the most mysterious time periods of ancient Greece. But not for any nefarious or particularly controversial reason. Unlike the periods that came after it, first the Iron Age, which was followed by the Archaic and then the Classical and into the Hellenistic, The Bronze Age lacks the level of written history that the others provide. We have writing, certainly, but it wasn't ancient Greek as we know it. That didn't come along until the Iron Age, and it tended to be that what was written down in these times was for very, very specific and not particularly helpful reasons. We'll get to what exactly that means, but my point right now is that so much of what we know from the Bronze Age is based less in the written record and more in the archaeological one. What that also means is that what we believe about the historical period has changed an awful lot in, say, just the past even like 50 years or so. The things we once believed about Bronze Age Greece have changed. Our knowledge has expanded, and particularly when it comes to the end of the Bronze Age, well, there's a lot to be said. We will get there. Over the month of April, we will be bringing you weekly episodes covering different aspects of the Bronze Age Mediterranean, primarily Greece, but as much beyond as we can manage to bring to you. And finally, its collapse. I have conversation episodes for you starting next Friday, and oh, are they good. I have talked to experts on ancient Mycenae, on the Homeric tradition and how it interacts with Bronze Age remnants. I have two experts coming to talk about the Bronze Age and its collapse, the reasons for it, all the contributing factors, and what we do and don't know about the very dramatic end to an incredibly important period in the grand scheme of human history. First, a quick note about today's episode. Frankly, the purpose behind it has changed very, very shortly before it was meant to come out. Honestly, it is not what I originally intended when I dreamed up this series, or when I have spent, honestly, so much time preparing it. But a lot of things have happened in the last week, and I've been utterly overwhelmed by work, and frankly, am like 30 seconds away from being so burnt out I can't form a sentence. So this is what I was capable of putting together in time for the promised date of April 2nd, but come Friday I will have had a couple of days to rest my brain and become capable again, and from there you will be getting the originally planned series. Today is a little very interesting introduction, but it's just not as well planned out and structured as I had envisioned, and as I hope it to be for the remaining series. Friday will be an episode on the ancient Minoans of Crete, and then from there we dive into regularly scheduled. I will be bringing you on Tuesdays, as always, narrative episodes on the Minoans, like I mentioned, though that's on Friday, the Mycenaeans, and the broader Mediterranean, focusing on the people who interacted with the people of ancient Greece and how those interactions inspired later very fun things. And then the collapse and all of the conversations associated with all of that. It is going to be a very exciting season. Honestly, Michaela has done so much work. I have done so much work. We're going to bring you some very fun history, tying it in with how much we all love mythology and, of course, the very dramatic end of an incredibly important people and region broadly. This is episode 255, The Bronze Age, Mythic Origins and the Real People Behind Them. The Bronze Age as a period is important for so many reasons, both in terms of the wider region and the people that were developing there and inventing, like, everything humanity needed to go on to thrive and create so much more. But also, as particularly in Greece, the inspiration for the mythical history that would go on to become things like the Iliad and the Odyssey. So today I want to introduce you to the concept of the Bronze Age period as we know it, but also how it ties in with the mythology that you and I know and love so well, the entire purpose for this show, so much of which is inspired by these very real people and the things that they left behind for future ancient Greeks of later periods to find and develop stories based on. Because they didn't have writing to associate with it, they were just finding these structures and remnants and creating these incredibly involved and intricate and beautiful and timeless stories to explain what they found. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I want to introduce you a little bit more to what this series is going to look like, because we wanted it to be about the Bronze Age as a period as much as it is about its end. And so we are covering these Bronze Age cultures of Greece and also the wider Mediterranean, but ultimately focusing on what it was that brought all of those cultures down in what ended up being a very dramatic series of events that led to its end. The Bronze Age collapse is often depicted as, you know, very dramatic and unexpected, singular kind of event. And I mean, the end result was dramatic, but it's not quite so wild and mysterious as the clickbait pseudo-historians might want you to believe. Civilizations fell, cultures crumbled, writing systems stopped being used, and the region went through a transition that was marked by famine, extreme poverty, and destruction. But there was no one singular thing that happened to cause this collapse, even though Google might give you terms like earthquake storm or mega drought. But instead, over the course of about a century, many major changes and transitions took place. Natural disasters and changes in the climate, everything came together to mark the end, at least in Greece, of the Mycenaean and Minoan cultures. And it is the degree to which they ended that was so transformative. The palaces they'd built and thrived in were, in many cases, destroyed or abandoned. The writing systems that they used to record their daily lives in those palaces stopped being used entirely, whether it was because they no longer had use for them or no longer had anyone who could still read or write in them is a question we will probably never have the answer to. But it was just lost, the use of this writing, just like the hordes of wealth once possessed by the elites was lost. Everything changed. And what came after was equally transformative and transitional. For a long time, we used to call it the Dark Ages, or the Greek Dark Ages. This was in large part due to the loss of these writing systems, Linear A and Linear B, and therefore the loss of the written record entirely. And it was in part because it was definitely a dark time after the end of the Bronze Age. Things had gone very poorly, people were struggling very much, and they had to kind of put everything back together in a completely different way. We just call it the Iron Age now, because all was not lost, it just changed completely. And while the beginning of it was marked by a lot of things that we might associate with darkness, loss, transformation, it was also marked by the creation of so much of what would go on to become the Greece that we know and love, the Greece, the ancient Greece that is so much more famous now, things we associate more with the archaic and classical periods, because it was the Iron Age that gave us Greek, that gave us the Greek alphabet, inspired by the Phoenicians and established during this period. If it weren't for the Iron Age, we would not have Homer. Or if we did, we wouldn't know it, because it never would have been written down. The problem with calling time periods like that Dark Ages too is that while the intention originally might have been to suggest this loss of the written record, this loss of a tangible textual history from which to base anything on, the ultimate connotation becomes something else. Like how we don't say Dark Ages to refer to the medieval period or Middle Ages anymore, because it suggests that there was something about the people that was wrong or intellectually lacking, that they weren't creating human history. But of course they were. There is no period of humanity when we were not creating human history in some way. Just like in the Bronze Age that came before them, the people of the Iron Age were creating. They were creating art and literature, even if it wasn't always being written down. They were creating human history. But of course, in order to understand what happened at the end of the Bronze Age that led to the transition that would happen in the Iron Age, we have to understand the people that thrived during the former, and therefore inspired the latter.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed. Cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The cultures that marked the beginning of Greek history, who would go on to become the most, at least mythologically relevant, characters and people. The Mycenaeans, originating on mainland Greece, and the Minoans, who started earlier, on Crete, and in many of the Greek islands of that area. The very real people who inspired the poets and historians who saw what remained of these Bronze Age cultures and developed long and storied histories to explain who they were and how they went on to found the later periods of ancient Greece that we are so familiar with. This inspiration for the Iliad and the Odyssey, the stories of Minos and the Minotaur in his labyrinth. You heard it in the quote that I read at the top of the episode, which was from Thucydides, a historian who wrote about the Peloponnesian War some 1,000 years after the height of ancient Mycenae in the Bronze Age, and who himself, as he's writing about this war that changed the face of his culture, this war between Athens and Sparta that threatened to tear the Greek world apart, he is still associating it with this mythical history of Homer that is, at its core, inspired by the very real people of Mycenaean Greece and, to a lesser extent, Minoan Crete. And as you heard in Thucydides, it was used not only as a mythic history, but as a means of uniting people that were, by and large, fairly separate cultures spread out over a large region of what is Greece and its islands. This mythic history served to unite them as a kind of shared culture to create what he is referring to as Hellas, literally Greece. But it is such a great example of how ancient Greek historians, people who were directly interested and understood that they were conveying history to their own people, the way they associated their history with these mythical origins. These mythic histories inspired by these very real people served to unify the Greek people in a way that is entirely formative of the Greece that I talk about on the show every week. Stories like these were a kind of mythic history, a melding of the divine with remnants of reality. There are very real people and cultures behind those stories, and while there may have been no big epic 10-year divine Trojan War, no heroes capable of fighting personified rivers or bull-human hybrids feasting on sacrificial youth in a labyrinth, the people of Bronze Age Greece and the wider Mediterranean were plenty impressive and went on to inspire those same heroes and divinities. But how did they develop this mythic history, right? So just as we can visit and marvel at some of the Bronze Age sites now, so could people living in antiquity. These sites and the artifacts left behind were the only tangible things that had been left by their ancestors. And so through them, they imagined a whole world that they understood as their own history. Because of the collapse of the Bronze Age that had come and the transition between two entirely different writing systems, they were left to interpret things more than people would during later periods. They were kind of left in the dark, even though it had only been, say, 100 years, maybe 200, between them. The collapse was dramatic enough, and the change was big enough, that there was just an enormous divide between the people of the Bronze Age and the later people of the Iron Age. Obviously, there would have been a cultural memory too, because it's not like everyone just died off and then was somehow reborn. But there was just so much change, which we will get into at the end of this series. There was so much change and it was so dramatic that it would have been a kind of vague cultural history that was able to be shifted and adjusted pretty easily, because it would have been entirely through just people talking to each other, whoever's left, and all of those different things. And of course, all of this, or heavy amounts of this, is speculation, because there is no written record for this time, because there is this loss in the written record, this gap. And so we kind of have to piece it together from what we have. And so this is where we get the world of oral storytelling and the Homeric tradition, which of course later would become like the thing that ancient Greeks held on to, because it was one of the first things in this new language that they then knew as their own. But of course, how Homer, quote unquote Homer, the oral tradition broadly, got these ideas for this mythic history comes from what they're looking at from the Bronze Age. So when they look at these incredible palatial complexes from the Bronze Age, which I will go into in great detail in future episodes, it was easy for the people of this Iron Age and later to imagine magnificent, larger-than-life people who were capable of just superhuman feats. Because the architecture was also incredibly different, and there was a missing piece that left it so that the people who came later just couldn't fathom how the people of the Bronze Age created the structures that they left behind. My favorite example of this is the walls that surround the Acropolis in Athens. Now, Athens was not a particularly major Bronze Age site. We probably won't be talking about it that much, but those walls are so iconic, and were so iconic to the later people of the region, that they looked up at these walls surrounding the Acropolis that were pre-existing, and they thought, we have no idea how to make those. They are so big, the pieces are so massive, the walls are so impressive, we can't fathom how we would do it. And so in their minds, they created, again, a mythic history for the creation of these walls. And that's why even now the walls are called the Cyclopean walls, because the imagination went to, they're so big, they must have been created by giants like the Cyclops. And that's true for Mycenae, the much more famous Bronze Age site, where enough people traveled that the story became imagining Agamemnon there, ruling over the Argolid. They lived amongst the palace of Knossos, the later people, and saw these wall paintings of bull jumping and horned altars, these double-edged axes, and the winding stairs and maze-like storerooms of this palace, and they imagined a labyrinth where a monstrous half-bull must have roamed the shadowy halls. The later people sailed through the sea, full of more islands than any one person could ever imagine visiting. And so they thought up a giant one-eyed man who might snack on passing sailors or toss rocks big enough to sink their ships. There's actually a really fun possible history for the Cyclops as a creature, and that is an elephant skull. Because the Google it. You can see how somebody would get the idea for a Cyclops from the skull of an elephant. And they imagined these world-shattering, decade-long wars where men and gods fought on the same battlefields, where the children of gods died in combat. It's likely that there were a lot of wars, minor wars probably, but a lot of wars that took place between the Mycenaeans and the Hittites in Anatolia, Turkey. And that's probably the inspiration for the Trojan War. So many of the myths that we love and obsess over came out of this need the ancient people had to understand where they came from and how these monumental structures that they no longer understood really how to create in the same way came to exist in their world. But one of the most important things to consider when it comes to the Bronze Age is the interconnectivity of the Mediterranean as a place. But why was there this gap, right? This knowledge gap? Why did they lose the writing structures that they had during the Bronze Age? Well, it all comes down to what exactly these languages were being used for. We are unable to translate Linear A today, but when it comes to Linear B, they weren't using it in ways that we might imagine today. They were using it simply, as far as we know, almost exclusively for palace records. And so through these palace records, we can determine some things. We have some ideas about their religion and the gods that they worshipped. And this would have been through things like, you know, the palace sent these items to this sanctuary for this god's celebration. But it wasn't anything like what we know of as Greek mythology now. It is all navigated through these just record system, these administrative things. Like, we sent wine to a sanctuary and it was for Hera. So we are able to understand that there was a Hera, but that is kind of where it ends. And so there are these little pieces we can put together. This comes up in great detail in my conversation about ancient Mycenae. I cannot wait for you all to hear that one. But these are the kind of bits and pieces that we are working with. After the collapse of the Bronze Age, the people, the cultures of Iron Age Greece were no longer really able to make use of most of the technologies that the cultures like the Mycenaeans and the Minoans had acquired. This phenomena, it's often described as them having, like, lost these abilities. But it's so much more complicated than that. Simply, though, I don't like the term lost. It feels to me like, again, this kind of Dark Ages idea. This idea that the people themselves were somehow intellectually lacking. But ultimately, what it comes down to is that part of the collapse, which we will cover, is a collapse of the elites. A major point, a major part of the collapse of the Bronze Age was a collapse of the elite structure of leadership of the period. Like, that sounds a bit nice, doesn't it? You will be amazed by the conversations I have about the collapse and just how relevant they are today. I had my mind blown. But what it means to have a collapse of the elite structure that had existed before is that they're no longer having the same kind of social organizations. The palaces that we'll talk about and which were kind of icons of the Bronze Age were no longer relevant because the elite who basically ran them and lived in them was no longer relevant. And so in many cases, they just sat empty. And so with that comes this just lack of need for a long time to create the same level of structure. And similarly, they no longer had the need to use these proto-Greek languages, Linear A and Linear B, to record palace records because there was no palace. And eventually enough time passes where they are no longer creating these monumental structures or recording palace records that the knowledge of how to do that gets lost because it isn't being used and it isn't being recorded. It was never recorded. And so it's not about any kind of change in people's intellectualism. It is simply about enough time passing where those things were not used or needed because of the earlier collapse that the knowledge of them was missing from the people that came later. Not that they were incapable of understanding it, just that the knowledge itself had died off, essentially. And so, of course, that's where everything comes together to facilitate this creation of a mythic history. Because if nothing is being written down, nothing is being recorded in that way, it doesn't take too many generations for that kind of thing to just kind of die off again, just kind of go missing. And then the later people, as they are figuring out their own ways of doing things, their new language, their new writing structure, their new architecture and building traditions, they are then looking back to the past and developing these stories based on what they're seeing, because what they're seeing is so foreign to what they've now created for themselves from scratch. How the Bronze Age transitioned to the Iron Age to give us the ancient Greece that we know so well is complex, but at its core, just that little transitional bit that I've been talking about in this episode is so simple and so human. Just to imagine that if the things aren't written down for somebody later to read, let alone the fact that they probably can't read it, the writing structure is no longer being used because the purpose it was developed and utilized for the entire time it existed is no longer necessary. It's very easy for this type of knowledge to just disappear. Not because of anything in the people, just it wasn't being used. On Friday, the earliest of Bronze Age Greek cultures, the Minoans, and how they laid the groundwork for everything I've just tried to introduce to you. This was very much an introductory episode, but I just wanted to emphasize kind of what is all going around at this time during this transition that's to come. It fascinates me most, which is why I've been able to just ramble on about it in this way. But over the next weeks, we really are going to dive into the people themselves, the Mycenaeans on the mainland, the Minoans on Crete and beyond, the broader Mediterranean, and how everyone was so interconnected. This just full, like, spider web of cultures talking to each other and sharing knowledge and sharing art and just sharing. We're going to talk about all of that. We are going to cover the collapse itself, this collapse of the elite structure. Oh, it's fascinating. And all these conversations along the way. Michaela and I have put together something really special for this month of episodes. And of course, we have had the invaluable help of Laura when it comes to all the conversation episodes that she works on. Together, I hope to bring you a really interesting and really relevant look into the Bronze Age Mediterranean, focusing on the Mycenaeans and the Minoans, and how it all just fell apart completely. Thank you all so much for listening. It's been a time. I will be back soon with those ancient Minoans. We are going to finally really dive in to the Bronze Age. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is written and produced by me, Liv Albert. Michaela Smith is the Hermes to my Olympians, my assistant producer. Laura Smith is the production assistant and audio engineer. The podcast is part of the iHeart Podcast Network. Listen on Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. Select music in this episode was by Luke Chaos. You can find more from me on my Patreon, which admittedly has not had new stuff in a while. I really hope to get back. My brain will start working again. We'll get there. But until then, there are so many bonus episodes from the past 7 years of my Patreon for you to find. If you want to help support the show, you can go to patreon.com/mythsbaby for that. Thank you all so much for listening. I appreciate you. I appreciate you. I am Liv and I love this shit.
This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season three of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.